Lauren Brooke Eisen is senior counsel at the Brennan Center, the justice program at NYU Law, the author of the book Inside Private Prisons, An American Dilemma in the Age of Mass Incarceration. Good morning, Lauren Brooke. I am an enormous fan. I'm an enormous fan of the Brennan Center. It is an honor to have you here in studio. I will try not to gush too much.
Thank you so much. I really am thrilled to be here today.
How often do you come to Portland?
Not very often.
So. Only to talk about private prisons?
Yes.
Pretty much. How do we rate in private prisons compared to other states, relative to other states?
So it's interesting. Oregon doesn't rely on private prisons.
Yeah.
But the Portland City Council recently voted to divest all of their holdings from, they started to look at private prisons and fossil fuels, and so the Portland City Council divested from all corporations, which includes private prisons, and that was part of their thinking behind their decision.
So we don't have them here, but if you just invest your pension dollars or invest city dollars in some mutual fund somewhere, the odds that it includes a private prison corporation are somewhat high.
Absolutely. So most people, most teachers, unions, pension funds, are invested in private prisons, specifically if anyone has any investments in Vanguard, that fund is invested in private prisons. It's actually pretty hard.
And a huge percentage of pension funds are in Vanguard.
Yes, and it's if most people looked at their funds, at their pension funds, at their retirement funds, they would see some connection to private prisons, and that's why this divestment campaign, which I write about in this book, has gained a lot of momentum at college campuses across the country, city councils. You know, Portland's led the way on that. So it's an interesting moment for the private prison industry and, you know, looking at the divestment from the industry entirely.
What impact does divestment have? Is it merely a moral expression by the investor or the voter or the protester or the public decision maker? Or does it impact stock prices? Does it impact decision making by investors and maybe even by the businesses themselves?
Well, I love that question, and it's something that I explore in the book. At the end of the day, all of these campaigns, whether we're talking about what's happening at UC Berkeley or Columbia University divesting from the private prison industry, which they did recently, they became the first university to completely divest from these funds. Most recently, New York City and Philadelphia both divested all of their pension funds from the private prison industry. So we're seeing a lot of momentum behind this movement. However, we really need the big funds like Vanguard to divest from the private prison corporations to really see a difference in their bottom line.
You have to have the massive mutual funds, Parnassus, Vanguard, the really biggest mutual funds. Then if they took the cues from New York City, University of California at Berkeley, maybe then something would happen.
Yes. And as we saw with, you know, what's happened with fossil fuel and tobacco and apartheid, these divestment campaigns can be very powerful, but you really need, you know, every city in the country and all the universities. You need such a huge amount of divestment to really impact their bottom lines.
And it's like climate change. I mean, the fact that if only one city does something about fossil fuels, it ain't going to do everything. But if no cities do anything, then nothing will happen.
Exactly. And it sends a message, and it's important for public education and more people are aware of these issues.
What sparked the spread of private prisons in the United States?
So what happened was in the mid-1980s, about 3/4 of states were under some sort of federal court order to reduce their prison populations. And one of those states was Tennessee. And a company called Corrections Corporation of America, modeled after the Hospital Corporation of America, offered to take over Tennessee's entire prison system for $250 million, along with a 99-year lease. And Tennessee ultimately rejected CCA's offer, but that was sort of the beginning of the modern private prison industry. And they started to, you know, what happened was a lot of directors of corrections and governors found themselves over a barrel. You know, they were faced with these federal court orders to reduce prison populations. Some states were releasing incarcerated individuals early. And the private prison industry really came to the rescue of so many states where policymakers, governors didn't want to raise taxes to build more prisons. And these corporations came in and they said, you know what? Outsource this to us. We will build these prisons cheaply, quickly. You don't have to go through all these complicated government procurement laws. You don't have to raise taxes. And that's what happened. And, you know, there's this really great quote from the Chicago Tribune in the mid-1980s that I think sort of sums up a lot of the debate that we've had about private prisons over the last four decades. And it's, there was considerable disagreement as to whether a Corrections Corporation of America lobbyist roaming the Capitol halls in Tennessee last week were, you know, cavalry coming to the rescue or profiteers coming to exploit. And I think that's a great quote that really gets to the heart of this debate.
It's fascinating to me. We got a question, by the way, from a texter. Which Vanguard fund? There are several. Do we know by name, or we have to research it after?
So Vanguard tends to map the market.
Yeah.
And
so just like an S&P 500 index fund.
And so that's why it's going to be very difficult for Vanguard to divest from these private prison corporations, because what they do is they reflect the market.
So you'd have to find a fund that explicitly avoids private prisons.
Yes.
Rather than finding the few that include them, you have to find the few that exclude them.
Yes, or just, you know, not invest in Vanguard.
So as I understand the dynamic in the 80s, there were a couple things going on. For one, you had kind of the rise of Ayn Rand politics and the rise of the anti-government movement. In California, for instance, you had Proposition 13, which is starting to limit public funding. At the same time, you had a rise in crime. That rise in crime led to a need for more incarceration, at least once people had been arrested, if need can be used. There wasn't the government money. And so they said, we've got a solution. We'll have corporations build it for us. By the way, Neil Goldschmidt, governor in this state, did build a bunch of public prisons here in the United States. It was the biggest thing he did as governor. It's the biggest part of his legacy. That's what happened in Oregon. In California, they talked about private. Do I have that roughly right? What am I missing?
Well, what you're missing is that what we're doing today is a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking, right? I mean, crime peaked in this country in 1991. And today, despite a lot of the rhetoric that we're seeing from the Trump administration and from Attorney General Sessions, we are safer in America than we've ever been. Yes, there are pockets of crime and you know, some slight upticks of violence in some cities, but for the most part, America is safer than it's ever been. But we didn't know that back in the mid-1980s, and crime was starting to tick up. But our policies were so punitive at the time. You know, we started to create these three strikes laws and send people to prison for very long periods of time. And states just couldn't keep up with the number of incarcerated individuals that were, you know, people who were being convicted of crimes and spending, you know, being sentenced for very long periods of time. And so you're right about that. You know, these corporations came in and they saw that this was a huge business opportunity, a growth opportunity. You know, in 1994, CCA, it's now rebranded itself to be Core Civic, you know, in their annual report.
Core Civic is the name of the private prison company?
So CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, has rebranded itself to, it's now called Core Civic.
What a nice name, Core Civic. It sounds like they teach, like, I don't know, English.
Yeah, like a civics class. Mm. And, you know, in their 1994 annual report, it states, you know, the market potential here is just untapped. And I think that illustrates the profit and you know, the huge profit motive behind these corporations. Just, you know, looking at how prison populations were skyrocketing in this country, and obviously there was just a lot of money to be made and has been made by investing in this industry.
Some of the book focuses on private immigration detention centers in the Southwest. This is a new, I'm even gonna presuppose it. It would seem to me that I'm trying to understand sort of the political economy here. You had a peak in crime in 91. The building of private prisons ends up being somewhat of a lagging indicator from that political argument gets really loud. That starts leaking out to capital markets, that leaks out to voters, that leaks out to legislatures, and they start investing in private prisons. All of a sudden, maybe the demand for these private prisons starts going down a little bit. But now there is a strong anti-immigration president. They've got a new market for private prisons. Is that roughly fair?
That's partly what's happened. So in, you know, the early 2000s, a lot of states started to realize how expensive corrections were. You know, corrections was eating into state budgets. And state policymakers were faced with, you know, they didn't have enough money for their education budgets and all of the other, and healthcare. Yet corrections continues to eat up the general fund money. So a lot of states started to reduce their prison populations. In fact, over the last decade, about 27 states have reduced incarceration and crime at the same time, which indicates you don't need more incarceration to reduce crime. And today what we're seeing is that
What you just said is really important. What you just said is even as people have reduced their prison spending, they've still seen a reduction in crime.
Absolutely. And in terms of immigration, today about 65% of detainees held by the Department of Homeland Security are housed in these privately run immigration detention centers. And with Trump's rhetoric and the administration's, you know, increasing draconian punitive policies related to immigration enforcement, we're going to see the private prison industry benefit directly from those decisions from this administration. I mean, a lot of your listeners may not realize that most of the immigration detention centers in this country are owned and operated by these private prison corporations.
And what is the connection? And I think I have some of the answer. And I think I have some of the answer because I've read some of the Brennan Center stuff. What is the connection between those private prisons and, I don't know, any hypothetical campaign donations? And by the way, as you're thinking about that answer, you're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY Portland, KQAC HD3 Portland, sister station KXRW LP Vancouver, streaming at xray.fm.
So the connection between, and the question was about immigration detention and
any of these private prison organizations giving money
and
to
the
members
lobbyists
of Congress and or
yes.
and or the president.
And so the book
policy.
The book traces a lot of the lobbying and donations to these campaigns, and for Trump's inauguration committee, GEO Group and CoreCivic both gave, you know, a couple of $100,000 for the
nice
inauguration committee. GEO Group contributed to one of the Trump PACs as he was running for
that
president.
Was generous.
But, you know, Hillary Clinton, when she was running for president, Senator Clinton, she actually gave back. She had taken some money from the private prison industry. And when Black Lives Matter and other groups protested her taking this money, she actually returned it to these corporations.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, team.